This is CliffCentral.com.
This is the Gareth Cliff Show on CliffCentral.com. It's the Friday edition of the show. It is Feb the 15th.
Yep.
I had to think about that for a few seconds. And I am Sia, and Ben is here, and Leanne is here as well. Gareth is actually off sick this morning, so he will be back on Mondays having a bit of a duvet day. But
yeah, thoughts and prayers. The dreaded headaches have returned for him.
You know, Ben, one day I'll be able to decipher very clearly between your sarcasm and your sincerity. But I do believe
you don't need to decipher. No, it'll always be sarcasm.
No, I disagree.
I'd like to give him the benefit of the doubt.
The benefit.
Oh, Ben, that could be the title of your autobiography.
For your benefit, yeah. That's what I'm. That's what I am for all of you.
Yeah. If you ever wanted to be a stripper,
could benefit
also be the name of your. Strip show? No, you don't like that?
Okay, interesting correlation you have between autobiography and stripping, but yeah. No, but I mean, like, Gareth has lots of headaches, so you got to think, like, you know.
Yeah, the migraines.
All these traumas in the head, you know, he's going to be a gonk one of these days. He's going to be drooling. He's going to have a helper guiding him through the day-to-day stuff.
I hope he hasn't been drinking diet soda.
Oh, why?
You know, we know it's bad for us, right?
Yeah.
And a new study has just been released by the American Heart Association and American Stroke Association. Drinking two or more of any kind of artificial sweetened drinks a day is linked to increased risk of clot-based strokes, heart attacks, and early death in women over 50.
Yeah, those things are going to kill you.
The risks obviously are higher for women with no history of heart disease or diabetes, and women who were obese or African-American.
You know, I know how some people think. They might go, oh, okay, it's an over-50s issue. What is, like, women over 50, I, as a young man, am fine. But I don't think we should be taking that route at all.
If it can do that to anyone,
exactly.
It can't be good for you.
Exactly. And everything in moderation. Go ahead, enjoy it, fine. But, you know, you just never know what that... that straw that breaks the camel's back might be for you in your case.
Yeah.
So just rather stay safe.
But also two a day, every day. I mean.
Well, I had a teacher like that.
Did you?
Who in grade 7,
yeah.
she was like known, and she loved calling her diet a Coke and a smoke because that's all she had. She would start the day with a couple of cigarettes and she would drink some Coke. And in the afternoon, she'd have more cigarettes and drink some Coke. And if she had any sort of proper food, it would be something greasy or horribly unhealthy. Heaven only knows how she's still alive today. And she's in her 70s.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Some people are just lucky that way.
I guess. But do you really want to take that chance, you know?
Yeah.
I just heard... yesterday, and I don't mean to get us even more down after that diet story, but a girl I went to school with actually passed away. She's probably a year or two younger than me, so she's 22, 23, from an allergic reaction to prescribed medication she was taking.
Oh, yeah.
So you just never know what it might be. And yeah, it just made me reevaluate and also be grateful for my life. So if we really are healthy, we're alive, we're able to go out and do what we love, what we just are afforded to do today, why jeopardize it with things like eating or drinking unhealthily? No, or, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and just make the small changes like, you know, water. Remember that it's something that's available to drink rather than Diet Cokes and herbal teas.
Okay. I agree with you too, with your bottled water and me just staring at you point blank in the eye.
It's like all these small habits you put in place. This is the only way you actually live life. You're almost like, well, I'm not about the healthy life. No, it's actually just called life. Like, this is how you do it.
Yeah.
This is how you should do it.
Just on a health note, an update on Sleeping Jesus, which is my CPAP machine.
Yeah, because this has been a tough week for Sleeping Jesus with the power things.
Yeah, with the power outage. So I'll go to sleep with it on and then wake up steaming up my mask because the machine's turned off.
Oh, gosh.
So, yeah, it obviously was made overseas without Africa's problems taken into consideration. There must be like some kind of battery pack or, you know, like little power bank or something that I can get.
Well, then, Leanne, what you can do is you become the South African distributor for Sleeping Jesus with South African climate or for economic climate issues.
Battery pack something.
Yeah, something like that.
Because it must be so frustrating. I'm not trying to add salt to the wound here, but it must be so frustrating that you got a couple of days of really enjoying sleep again. And then as soon as you get into the rhythm of that, oh, well, load shedding.
Yeah, it's not nice to have it taken away from you when you've just realized how good it is. But it was quite interesting seeing my, just a routine visit to my psychiatrist. And I mentioned the Sleeping Jesus to her, and she was just amazed that I'd got it and, you know, heading in the right direction and all of this sort of thing. And she said, there's actually brand new research that's been released. She told me the things that your brain does when you're sleeping. And the third thing is something that's just brand new. They've only figured it out now. Lo and behold, I see an article on it here. And that's that during your sleep, your brain actually cleans itself like a car wash.
Wow. Oh.
So it's a remarkable like sewage system in the brain. It's called the glymphatic system. And it kicks into high gear, but you have to be in deep REM sleep for it to happen. It's a sanitization system, and it cleanses the brain of a sticky, toxic protein linked to Alzheimer's, known as beta amyloid.
Fascinating.
So without sufficient sleep, you fail to get that power cleanse. And obviously, with each passing night of insufficient sleep, that Alzheimer's disease risk escalates like compounding interest. So that's quite interesting how your brain does this whole little car wash thing. while you're sleeping.
But it totally makes sense when you think of what your brain processes and goes through on a day-to-day basis. Because everything has to reboot, right? Everything has to refresh.
Well, those are the other two functions, is just the rest, and it also compartmentalizes everything. So during the day, things have been happening, but you're just kind of acting in emergency mode and getting things done. You're not processing all of your thoughts. Mm-hmm. So when you sleep, your mind processes and files everything into cabinets. That's the first thing. The second thing is it gets some rest. And the third thing that they've only found out now is that it gives itself a wash.
And then I guess you think about how your body has been coping without a lot of sleep. If this is something that the brain does when you get adequate and REM sleep, and which you haven't been getting.
Oh, it affects so many things, as we know.
Wow. As
we now know after all of this experience. Yeah, you've got it disrupts your blood sugar levels so profoundly that you could be classified as pre-diabetic. Short sleeping increases the likelihood of your coronary arteries becoming blocked and brittle, setting you on a path towards cardiovascular disease, stroke, and congestive heart failure. And you know, now that we know all of this and Sleeping Jesus has arrived, I can sleep in peace, knowing that it's the first step towards proper health, because without it, it wasn't worth doing any of the other.
As long as Sleeping Jesus makes you happy.
And I finally have a clean mind.
That's it, Leanne. Yeah. Clean mind. Start every day anew, afresh.
My mind's no longer
it's
in the gutter.
Not every day. We use the term clean mind for you. you dirty person, you. By the way, don't miss the third episode of our series, The Naked Economy, which tells the behind-the-scenes stories of businesses that think outside the box and the people that make them work. Shane turns the tables on Ernie and gets him to tell his own story, how he learned from the inside why there's usually so little love for insurance companies, and how he discovered that it could be so much better. It's a redemptive tale of second chances and finding opportunities to do something different and meaningful. Find out more at cliffcentral.com. Awesome. What else is in the news?
Well, Tesla. Now, I want to live in a world where I can just live like this. You know, like everyone talks about Tesla cars being so amazing, and it's just because of what they are, they create such amazing PR for themselves, because here we are talking about them again and again and again.
Mm.
Now, you know, there's obviously people that leave their dogs in the car. It's been an issue around the world for many, many years. Some animals unfortunately passed away as a result of this because they get dehydrated and just the heat. Mm. But now Tesla's actually got its own dog or pet mode. So you leave your car, you put the pet mode on, because that's what Tesla is. These cars are like machines / computers. And then on the big screen, it'll say, my owner will be back soon. And then the climate change, the environment within the car will be just right for the dog. But like big screen. So if you're thinking like, oh, shame, poor dog is being left in this swelteringly hot car.
And you pick up a brick to and you break
wanna,
open.
Exactly. You want to pick up a brick like Leanne always does. And you want to break the dog free. Dog's chilling. And on the big screen, it's just like, don't worry. The temperature is currently, and then the temperature's there. And it says, my owner will be back soon.
Ooh.
George Meany actually mentioned this very briefly, but I'm now seeing exactly how it works. And yeah, I'm sad to say, but it's happened to people and children before. Yeah.
Well, like children obviously aren't as important as dogs, but I mean, it's just a really cool thing that these cars are just all about your life. Like they just really are all about your life, making things better. It's about being intuitive and how you can go about living a better, more productive life.
I actually quite like having my dog in the car when I'm either feeling socially awkward or have been asked to do a survey or something like that, where it's a case of if I'm at the pharmacy and they say, well, have you done your Discovery Health Point check yet? And I'm like, sorry, my dog's in the car.
Yeah,
it's actually a great excuse.
So I don't need that system. Mine works fine.
But even though, if your dog's in the car, you don't want your dog to be lonely. You just want to get back to your dog. That's a fair enough reason to avoid a survey. Or a collection tin.
Folks, it's quite eerie to bring up, but yesterday, being the 14th of February, and Valentine's Day and all good and well, it was the day Oscar shot Riva 6 years ago, but yesterday also marked a year since the famed Parkland shooting in the United States.
Oh, right, yeah.
How crazy that all of these things happen on a day that's meant to be all about love and, but I'm sure these crazy killers also are somewhat cognizant of it. The school actually took a moment of silence to remember the people that they've lost in the shooting. And remember, this happened at a high school called Stoneman Douglas High School in the US, and 14 students and 3 staff members were killed in the shooting, and the shooter was a former student of the school themselves. And I bring this up because, and I only discovered this morning as I was prepping for the show, but this week I found myself watching a very short documentary on the Sandy Hook shooting.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yes.
It happened in 2013, on the 14th of December, and that was at an elementary school in Connecticut State in the US. And it was so chilling to watch this documentary. It's even available on YouTube. It was made by a YouTube channel. And the documentary chronicles how the town has moved on 5 years after the shooting. And I think just because we don't hear of the story anymore in the news, just because it's not something that we remember top of mind anymore, doesn't mean that everything is what it was. And there are still people who are battling with moving on, still trying to get their lives back together. So it was quite sobering to hear how these people's lives are affected. The one thing that stuck with me was one of the teachers, she's actually a librarian, who says still to this day, they will be reminded of the shooting in a jarring way when a book falls from the shelf by mistake.
Yeah.
And that just sends everyone into panic mode again.
And it's PTSD. I didn't
think of it that way.
In its highest form.
You know, she's working in a room full of books and just one book falling to the floor, and it's a loud bang. And now that triggers her and some of the kids who are still in the school who were affected. And the librarian as well was telling the story of how she had a group, I think, of first or second graders in the library when the shots started being fired.
Yeah.
And she wasn't really sure what was happening. And only later did she realize, oh my goodness, well, these are gunshots, and these gunshots are actually moving closer and closer to where we are. And so that's when she didn't want to freak the kids out, even though she was scared herself. And she tried to tell the kids, listen, we're playing a game. Let's everyone go and try and find the best place to hide. We're playing hide and go seek. Mm-hmm. So these kids had to crawl on the floor in silence, and they went and they actually found different cupboards to all run and hide in. And she had to make sure that her kids as well were safe. And she was walking towards the library door, and there were three doors that were in the entrance of the library, and she had to end up making the decision on the third door, because the lock was on the outside. She had to end up making this decision of, do I walk out into the corridor and lock the door to ensure that all of these kids are safe inside, but I might risk my own life, or do I just lock these two, which aren't the strongest of doors, and hope that the shooter doesn't come inside so that I can at least ensure my safety by hiding with the rest of the kids. Mm-hmm. And I cannot imagine what it is like to be in that situation.
Yeah, it's awful.
It is.
Hope you never have to.
Horrible. It is absolutely horrible. And you think about it, yes, it's so noble to be the hero who at your funeral, they'll say, well, Mary was amazing. She sacrificed her own life for the lives of her class. But hey, you know, Mary still wants to live and you still want to have an amazing life. She ended up opting for, you know, rather not being the hero. She was a hero to a certain extent, definitely. And she went and she hid with all of the kids in one of the cupboards. And they were actually one of the last groups of people to be saved from the building because they were hidden so well. And also when the SWAT team was now inside the school building, they didn't know who it was out there and they didn't know who to trust. So, you know, when you aren't in the know, it could have been a group of six shooters who were in the building. So they didn't exactly want to say, hey, we're in here.
Yeah.
But eventually they were found. And yeah, so it's called Sandy Hook 5 years later on YouTube. It's about 20 minutes long. But you hear, I think it's like five different people telling their stories of how they've moved past the shooting is really, really sobering. So yeah, to think about it, it's been a year since the Parkland shooting and years after the Sandy Hook shooting. And so, yes, we roll our eyes and we make fun of it sometimes, that thoughts and prayers. But I really do think, you know, just we need to spare a thought of these people who've been affected in these ways. And just because they aren't in headlines anymore doesn't mean, you know, we don't really think about what they're going through. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty sad, too. So, reflecting on Valentine's Day yesterday, how much do you think 50 roses cost you? 50 roses.
South African terms?
Yes.
On Valentine's Day? On Valentine's Day. Like on or around?
Yesterday.
Oh, man.
250
50 roses.
No, much more than that.
Yeah. It's just your romantics, yeah? No concept about how much roses cost.
I got an average bunch on a good day is like 100 rand, isn't it?
50 roses.
Well, 50. Okay, 50.
50 is a lot.
800 rands.
Leanne, you want to fathom a guess on top?
Yeah, it's, I'd say around 1,000.
700 rand is what Chuckers was selling 50 roses for yesterday.
Y'all missed me with the romance thing.
Okay, so 700 for 50, and of course there was outrage. People going, oh, that's so expensive. But wait.
There's more.
For 100 roses, guess what net florists were selling them for?
I don't know.
1,000 rands.
4,500 rand.
See, that's more what I was thinking.
In a glass vase.
I actually received 1,000 red roses one Valentine's Day.
1,000?
Sorry, I mean 100.
1,000.
Jesus Christ, 1,000.
Who is that person and why aren't they still in your life?
That's like the entire budget for The Bachelor.
Were you like with them in a relationship at the point?
Yes.
Oh, that is...
It was a new relationship.
100 red roses.
And it was short-lived.
Girl, but it was surely amazing while it lasted.
Yeah, I was pretty spoiled.
Yeah, that's quite
that's
sweet.
Incredible. So if you give 100 roses, you're in for 4,500. Like, that's a weekend away.
Yeah,
yeah, give or take.
Not the fanciest, but yeah, I mean, it's a weekend away. It's a decent weekend away.
You really, it's like You really only do it if you've been in shit recently, or you're going to be.
Or you really just really, really want to have sex with someone.
Or a first sort of impression.
Wow.
And
you know, like, the thing is, like, it's such a irregular purchase. You just have no concept about what that will cost.
Mm-hmm. So I have actually saw a couple of people who I know with these massive bouquets of flowers.
Sorry. So it's 4,499 rand and 79.95 delivery.
Oh, these things matter. So I'm thinking about all of the people I saw, like, on Instagram with these flowers. Someone spent 4,500 rand for you. And, you know, like, we understand it in a celebrity sense. Like, Kanye West actually covered their whole lounge floor with roses and vases for Kim Kardashian. And Kim Kardashian was walking downstairs in the morning and she saw all of these. And then, very casually in their world, Kenny G was also in the middle of their lounge and started playing for her.
Kenny G was there.
They pulled him out and blew off the dust off his shoulders.
And he was bleeding from all the roses, these thorns he'd walked through to get to the middle of the lounge.
Like, yeah, you hear of these Hollywood stories and that's one thing. But in South Africa, just for every single Tom, Dick and Jabulani, for someone to spend 4,500 rands on you? Hey, must be love, guys.
Yeah, or you're in shit.
May I actually share what my sister's boyfriend did for her? Which
25 roses.
One rose in this economic time. Use it, don't use it. It's kind of corny, but he is training for the Comrades Marathon currently.
Yeah.
And so...
Is the relationship really that level?
What do you mean?
Where he's running away.
No,
or fair. Can run away at any point.
He's daily taking these long runs. Oh. And for the past couple of weeks, he's been not exactly being transparent with how well he's progressing with his fitness. And so yesterday, and he lives quite a substantial way away from where my sister lives. And so yesterday he texts her saying, look, I'm going on a run. I'm leaving my phone at home. I'll chat to you when I get back home. And so she says, okay, all good and well. He ran to our house.
How long did it take him? Sweet.
It was like 2 hours one way. Guys, I think, screw anyone who rolls their eyes at this. He ran like a casual 2 hours to our house, knocked outside our door.
It was like, very cool.
Hey, just wanted to see Zandile. And like, she walked out and he was like, hey, just wanted to see your face, Valentine's Day.
Oh, that's very sweet. I hope he stopped off at a petrol station and had a bit of a wash before.
So he arrived sweaty, empty-handed.
No, it's a good gesture.
Ben, why are you trying
he's getting in his own miles.
Yeah, at first I was like,
sounds more like a him kind of thing. He's just getting his miles in.
He's just trying to do his fitness. But I thought it was quite sweet, you know, the fact that, because the Comrades is in a couple of months now, I think it's in June, and we were slightly worried, like, you aren't exactly doing well with this fitness thing, because you're saying, like, oh, I'm struggling, and my breathing's not good, and my legs are kind of giving way after an hour, whatever the case is. But here he was, like,
Has he got home yet? Yes. I mean, he gave everything to get there within 2 hours. He's like, I've got this. He's like, shit, I got to go home now.
He did, yeah. He did go home. But I think that is so sweet. Like, to say someone ran 2 hours for you.
Wouldn't you have a song, I'm going to run to you?
I'm going to run to you.
See, when you host the show, you got to have this on the back burner.
I'm not that corny, okay? And I was telling the also, story and I didn't think of it.
I ran all night.
No, that's I drove all night.
To get to you. Celine Dion, I've just changed it. So, yeah. I'm very adaptable.
But isn't that sweet?
I like that. You know what?
He moved up the ranks in my heart.
Even if he hadn't run, it still would have been a nice surprise if he'd have just driven there. I think he put in a lot of effort.
driving isn't impressive. It's the running part. She ran all the way. And I'm like, you idiot, what if you found her and she wasn't at home? Then all of this was in vain because you didn't have your phone on you and whatnot. And my sister also was like, yeah, I appreciate it. But yeah, you do need to get your fitness in, so run back home. I'm not driving you, driving you home either.
Well, Prince Harry was alone for Valentine's Day because he's... away, duty calls for the Duke of Sussex. He's currently in Bardufoss in Norway.
Who?
Where?
Yeah.
Who is he in?
He's in Bardufoss.
That's an actual place?
Yes, in Norway. For what they call the exercise clockwork. It's an annual winter exercise based in one of the world's most demanding environments, 200 miles inside the Arctic Circle, which has trained over 16,000 Royal Marines and Royal Navy sailors and airmen since 1969. So in other words, he's seriously watching people work out in the freezing cold instead of hanging out with Meghan. Anyway,
who's heavily pregnant at this point.
Yeah. The people at Exercise Clockwork were very sweet. They covered one of the makeshift shelters that Prince Harry was stopping by at with photos of him and Meghan on their wedding day. And then, they've taken photos of him for us to see, and he's grinning from ear to ear. It's quite sweet. He says, "You weirdos."
Yeah.
He says, "It's very kind of you to invite me to your private shrine," or whatever you want to call it. But he quite enjoyed it.
Yeah, it does seem slightly odd that, people had to spend a good couple of hours finding these pictures and printing them out, and now you want me to walk in and see all of this? It's a bit weird. But remind me again, what was he exactly doing?
He's monitoring training there. He's quite senior now in the ranks. So I don't know if he's necessarily taking part in all the grueling training, but it's for the Royal Marines and Royal Navy sailors. And yeah, judging by
in the Navy,
this is what happens when you're in the Navy.
Look how desperate the media are. In the same article, they say back in 2015, Markle wrote in her blog about how practicing self-love on Valentine's Day is the most important thing, and then they put in a little extract.
Oh, please.
Yeah.
I mean, as well, that this is their first... this is their first Valentine's Day as a couple, and they aren't spending it together.
Yeah, because he's in Dufos.
Badufos.
Badufos. It's like Barbados.
Barbados?
Barbados.
Except in a really, really cold place in the middle of the Arctic.
Barbados sounds like a Greek dish you'd get somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Leanne, what happened with former First Lady Michelle Obama and her mother somehow?
At the Grammys?
Yeah, she was at the Grammys and she surprised everyone there and surprised millions of people watching at home.
Mm-hmm.
She even surprised her own mother, who saw her on TV and started messaging her.
So moms world over are the same. Why are you texting her when you know she's on stage and she doesn't have the time to read your text? But okay, go on.
So Michelle Obama shared the funny texts exchanged between her and her mom. Her mom's Marianne Robinson. And Michelle's shared screenshots of it on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
And she said... She captioned it, "When your mom doesn't think you're a real celebrity. Tonight in Phoenix, I shared this text thread from my mom from the Grammys night, and I had to share it with you all. Hashtag texts from mom." And the texts go with Marianne, the mom, saying, "I guess you were a hit at the Grammys," smiley face emoji. Mm-hmm. Michelle says, "I'm sitting here with Valerie, and this text is so typically you. Did you watch it?" She says, "I saw it because Gracie called me. Did you meet any of the real stars, or did you run right? Right after you were done?" So Michelle says, "I told you I was going to be on it." So the mom says, "No, you didn't. I would have remembered that, even though I don't remember much." So Michelle Obama says, "I thought I told you," and she says, "And I'm a real star, by the way." And the mom goes, "Yeah."
It almost sounds like a half-hearted yeah.
Yeah.
If you did miss it and you didn't get to catch it, here's a bit of the former First Lady Michelle Obama's speech at the Grammys.
From the Motown records I wore out on the South Side to the Who Run the World songs that fueled me through this last decade, music has always helped me tell my story. And I know that's true for everybody here. Whether we like country or rap or rock, music helps us share ourselves, our dignity and sorrows, our hopes and joys. It allows us to hear one another.
To invite each other in. Music shows us that all of it matters. Every story within every voice, every note within every song.
Is that right, ladies?
Yes.
Wow, Leanne.
I memorized it.
This clearly means that much to you. I didn't know Michelle Obama was such
I'm a real fan.
Wow. What does it mean to you to hear her say such? Does it just touch you in a very special place?
I'm just reading what CNN Politics transcribed.
Yeah, look, the Obamas, wherever you are on the political side, I think the Obamas are just the couple of cools.
Oh, they're still very much loved.
Absolutely. And they are making the right steps after their presidency, whatever, you know, regardless of where they are. You know, the former first lady had the best-selling book last year, and now she's at the Grammys. They just always seem cool. And even this exchange from the mother just makes them even more endearing in my eyes,
even
I have to be honest.
The what from her mother?
Text exchange. Not what? Sex change.
I heard sex change. And I think that's very fair on Michelle. I mean, there's rumors, but I don't think you should be fanning the flames with this, yeah.
No, I don't know what you're talking about, so I shall just move on very swiftly.
So controversial.
Speaking of, I wanted to make a segue, but it was too horrible to do.
Yeah, well, let's keep it classy. So upskirting is now going to be a criminal offense in the UK.
What's upskirting?
So taking, and I can't believe this is actually a thing that people do, but taking pictures of girls' skirts.
Oh, yeah.
Sexual gratification.
And I say, oh, yeah, as in not because I do it. I say, oh, yeah, because...
Yeah, but it's a real thing. Like obviously, in warm weather, women like to wear skirts. I mean, who wouldn't? Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it's a general practice that some people do like to try to take pictures up their skirts.
Nasty.
So, yeah, I've seen how they've seen in sort of cartoons or in memes... How they do it is the one guy will chat to her and distract her, and the other one will go from behind and take a photograph under her dress.
Outrageous. Anyway, you can be
so pathetic.
You can now face prison up to 2 years in the UK. And this is a good move. It's just like this behavior. I think it's so much better than this. Anyway, there's been some women who've been campaigning for this for the last 18 months. And here it is. It's going to be a thing now. So if you're caught upskirting, essentially taking pictures without someone's consent under their garments is how they really break it down.
Yeah.
Yeah. So put these creeps in jail.
Or even standing under stairs that don't have the gaps filled.
Oh, right.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
It's really silly. Well,
I'm not mad at this. I don't know about you, but you know, it's a violation, and I think all violations should be accordingly punished.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
So there's an article on the professions where you're most likely to meet your spouse.
Ooh, tell me in broadcasting and then I'll be happy.
I was very surprised about this. I didn't expect this at all. But
where am I going to meet my soulmate?
All right, let me do it backwards from number 5. In 5th place, post-secondary teachers. That's sort of very specific.
So what is that, like high school teachers?
I think so, yeah. I think maybe tertiary, yeah. In 4th place, lawyers are most likely to find a mate in the lawyering industry.
Did you just say the lawyering industry?
There's a lot of blackmail involved in that.
Hey, let's talk to Pinky. Pinky, you're studying law. Oh, well, you've studied law. Hey, how about this? Number 4, law is where you're most likely to meet your spouse?
I strongly doubt that, eh?
How?
From my interaction with lawyers, I don't think so.
Pinky, it's
if
the month of love.
If you're up for an argument, like a constant argument every morning, for everything, then yes, but
yeah, there's
for me,
a lot of sexual
okay.
tension with arguing, though.
I don't know, hey, I'm okay.
But don't you, like, this is how in my fantasy world it works. You're all dressed immaculately, right? You always have to look presentable.
You see, the thing is, it's not like suits, you know? It's not like suits. It's quite disappointing.
But you do spend hours on end working on a case.
Yeah. Yeah, you do.
And sometimes you're working on it as a team.
Okay, that sounds cool.
And then Dumisani turns around and he says, actually, Pinky, point of correction.
Yeah, to which Pinky then says, I object, leave me alone, you creep.
Stop taking photos under my skirt.
Yeah. Okay, so you haven't found your soulmate.
I haven't.
Never mind, Pinky. Okay, so number 4, where you're most likely to meet your mate is...
Number 4 is lawyers.
Law. Okay.
Number 3, and you can tell this is a US survey, casino workers. But...
What is romantic about working at a casino?
Late nights.
But a depressing place.
Yeah, I know, exactly. So you try to find something positive in a depressing place, and it's 3 a.m.
I'd understand hooking up at work, but not a soulmate.
Well, hookups lead to this kind of stuff,
yeah? Yeah.
But if you think about everyone that's involved, you know, you've got bartenders, flight attendants, switchboard operators, massage therapists. They're all involved in the casino world. You know, they'll stay over at a casino. If you're thinking of the US, you know, flying into Vegas or whatever. Sense. So it's all like the salacious lifestyle that's attached with casinos. But it's also got the highest divorce rating of 52.9%.
There we go. I'm not really surprised.
Well, I guess, you know, that whole easy come, easy go kind of thing. If there's going to be so many numerous hookups, then your chance of secondary hookups or new hookups also there.
And also it's so easy to get married in Vegas, you know, so...
I guess also at the same time, a casino, there are people who've most probably also had a drink or two in their system, so their guards are a bit down.
Yeah.
They've just lost a crap ton of money and looking for comfort.
In second place, with 25% chance of finding a mate, is physicians and surgeons, which is why programs like Grey's Anatomy, ER, all the rest have carried us through our adult lives. And the most successful place to find a mate in the professional industry?
Yeah.
Agricultural workers.
Okay. Who is sucker flow?
Yeah.
Goodbye. Who put this together?
A shepherd's delight.
Yeah, there you go.
I think they're just trying to punch their own industry. Agricultural workers?
Yeah.
In the midst of cow dung and having to hold the teats of a cow and manure.
Drive tractors and chew bits of maize in while you're doing so.
Overalls.
Sounds pretty sexy to me. Gazing at the sunset on the combine harvester.
And then what are you smelling as you're gazing into the sunset?
Romance.
Maybe it's just because...
Organic love.
Maybe it is a smell thing. That, you know, female farmers and male farmers, or male farmers and male farmers, or whatever, all have this kind of dungy smell, and they can only tolerate it if they're also one of those dungy smell people.
And I guess you're not exactly spoiled for choice, you know, like you're kind of stuck with people.
Yeah, you're out in the rural areas, you know.
It's like when you drive home and you get stuck in like a 15 tractor traffic jam and you can look at other people.
You kind of marry the girl next door from the farm next door.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not for that. No.
You're not a rural person, though. I mean, if you really didn't have much choice, a lot of these people in rural America haven't even been to a big city.
Yeah, I don't even find the fantasy of like, cowboy or farmer hot. So I don't get it, no. Okay, if you're lifting
good-looking
heavy
things, wine farmer in the Cape.
That's my liking.
There we go. That's
no, not
made
even
you
a wine
better.
Farmer, because you're still working the son of a wine farmer.
Okay.
Because at least you just have the family money and don't have to work a lot. That's hot. Now we're talking.
There you go.
Now we're talking.
I've helped you along.
And then I wanted to bring this up. Ben, you actually reminded me as you were talking about the upskirt freaks. Liz Moonves of CBS, you know, we've been keeping tabs with...
Sounds like an upskirter.
Liz Moonves.
He is a bit of an upskirter. You know, he was the former head of CBS, the major network in the States, and he was taken off his position because of some of the Me Too allegations around him. And well, there's a new update. Is that redundant? A new update? Of course, an update will be new.
Yeah, that is redundant.
Okay. There's an update on the story. Thank you, Leon.
A fresh update.
That's also slightly redundant.
It's just slightly better, though.
Oh, excuse us, master of English. I'm getting sidetracked. So here's something new that's come out of that case. So it's now being found out through investigation that Liz Moonves and some of his friends in high places in CBS could actually be guiltier than we think, because as soon as the first whispers of the Me Too movement started coming out, and a lot of people now saying we're going to stand up and we're going to speak out against allegations and things that have been done to us, Les and his friends started selling all of their stocks that they have in CBS. Now, you could just simply say, oh no, perhaps they were thinking about this for a long time, and this is something they were planning, and they were just not interested in owning a lot of the company anymore. Or most probably in these times, you're going, the shady mofos, they knew that it was only a matter of time up until their stories hit the surface. Mm-hmm. And so they thought, let's at least cash out while we're able to, and let's sell our stocks now. Les and his friends have sold their value of more than 200 million US dollars of CBS as soon as the Me Too saga came out.
Interesting.
What makes Les even guiltier in all of this? So let's take the total amount of 200 million US dollars. Les sold 155 million US dollars of his stocks. I think this makes him look guiltier in my eyes. Sure. He was like,
it's a lot of shifting of money.
That's a lot. You know, you could still want to sell some stock and still keep some. And, you know, if you sold 5 million, it wouldn't really raise eyebrows. But selling 155 million US dollars and some of his other friends then selling the rest of it. And they sold it as early as November of 2017. That's really the beginning of the Ronan Farrow article, the New York Times. That was Harvey Weinstein for the first time. Because remember, like, Oprah spoke at the Golden Globes last year this time. So it was only like 2 months later where Oprah did the whole Me Too speech at the Golden Globes. So you think, yeah, Les, you knew what was going on and you wanted to save your behind with this.
That's the thing when you're committing a crime, whether it be upskirting, whether it be whatever it is, is that once you get caught, you know what's coming. So when these things came out, Les and his moon vest, they were like, well, she's got to shift this stuff quick, sharp.
Yeah. It is so dodgy. Selling 155 million US dollars of your stocks and the rest of his team selling the remainder. And this is now, he knew what was coming after him, because after this, he was harassed and allegedly harassed and assaulted six different women, and they've all been coming out with their own stories. But right now, we still don't really know what's going to happen to Les. He's still in this gray area of being
he's
involved.
He's got a lot of money for lawyers.
Les, be honest.
He's got a lot of money for lawyers now.
Les, be honest. Yeah, he's still in a gray area of working at CBS. His wife, who's a TV host, still hosts Celebrity Big Brother, and she's still saying that she supports Les. So it's just another interesting day at the office for these freaks. But anyway, let's move on. It is a Friday, and we rely on George Meany for weekly motoring updates. Good morning, George.
How's it here?
How are you?
Hello, Ben and Leanne.
Hey.
How was your week?
Horrified to hear about the upskirt stuff that goes on. I didn't even know people do that.
Yeah, right? That's the thing, George. Like, these laws have to come in place. Yeah. It's hard to comprehend. They have to, but...
Yeah, I don't get it. I just don't get it. You know, some of the headlines I've seen this week on, you know, besides cars, have been horrifying. You know, people beating up their babies and leaving them in drains.
Right, that case in Durban.
Yeah.
It was a three-hour... ordeal for authorities to get that baby out.
The baby had the placenta still attached. No, it's terrible. People are sick. Absolutely sick. I don't know how they freaking think. But anyway, on to lighter things.
Yes.
Shell, you know the petrol filling station, Shell. They are setting themselves up squarely to shift to an electric filling station or charging station network. So they've partnered with a company called GridCars, and GridCars is actually driving this this initiative. They're trying to get all of the filling stations to do it.
But Grid Shell's Cars jumped on the driving this. GridCars driving.
Too clever, see.
Thanks, I'm quiet and I'll be in the corner now.
Yeah, so the company called GridCars is driving this initiative to try and get filling stations to put electric charging stations across their networks. And Shell's jumped on the bandwagon. A couple of others have as well, but Shell seems to be leading the pack. And they're committing to 200 charging stations by the end of next month.
Whoa. Hmm.
But, George, a charging station, okay, to think of it like this, how long does it take to charge your average electric car?
Depends. I mean, the supercharger network with Tesla, you could have enough charge to go a couple of hundred kilometers in 30 minutes.
So can you imagine what the charging stations would look like? Because, I mean, petrol takes, what, like 5 minutes to fill up, basically?
Yeah. I think it's a very good point. So,
interesting to know how they structure the flow of
use. It's
going
to have like a shopping center and a spa. And
Or do you like book a time, like a massage? It's like, I'm filling up at 10:30. And then you arrive, and then
you get your slot.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah. I mean, I was in San Francisco a couple of weeks ago, and you'll see cars. Went to the Tesla factory, and literally people sit in their cars waiting to charge. Hmm. They sit there reading, listening to music. So I think it's a planned thing rather than currently you fill up on your petrol.
Low, yeah.
So I think it's more of a planned thing, and you're right, Leanne. Maybe filling stations and what is at that forecourt will begin to change because you need other stuff to keep people busy for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
If you're going 50 Ks, you could just go and, you know, put 10 Rand in or something.
I guess.
So I mean, I think this is a good thing. The naysayers that think that South Africa's not going to...
Is the 200 stations by next month thing? This is a global...
No, this is South Africa.
South Africa alone,
yes. Globally, there's many more, but this is South Africa alone.
Wow, 200, that's a big deal.
Yeah. On the back of that, then Tesla's got to be in the country then.
Exactly.
Because you would think, like, it'd be a risk taking it out now, but when you've got an infrastructure set up like that, then it's a no-brainer.
It's a no-brainer, absolutely.
But and then you finally get the car you want, George.
Exactly. I can't wait. I'll keep tweeting Elon Musk till he answers me.
One day he shall.
One day he will. Yes. I think so. Anyway, on to a heavier note. Last week, Thursday, the Department of Transport released a green transport strategy for South Africa, which spans 2018 to 2050. And they are proposing to increase license fees on higher emission cars, regulate emissions by testing cars that are older, banning high mileage cars over 400,000 kilometers. And they're putting these proposals forward to try and apparently drive the future of green energy through electric cars. They're also proposing no car zones in city centers and want to build bike lanes.
Oh.
Which, you know, I don't know how possible this is, but it's a nice initiative. The thing that I liked about this this strategy was there's clear encouragement to shift to electric cars by incentivizing manufacturers, which now comes the reduction of the import taxes. So if that's part of their strategy, I think that's probably the biggest part.
But also, George, like, just so smart in the South African context, because we need all the diesel we can to power Eskom, so we can't waste it on cars.
Exactly. We need electric cars.
Yeah, I'm all happy for that, but as long as, if it's a push by government, let them also support infrastructure in other ways. So if you say I shouldn't park or drive my car in this area, make sure that the buses are working efficiently, make sure that the trains are working efficiently, then I'll gladly take public transport.
So part of the strategy is to upgrade the public transport systems and to reduce the number of trucks on the road by creating what they call a green belt of trains. Okay. To encourage goods transport via trains. And then another little part of this report also proposes tagging systems for public transport where you don't have to carry cash or use credit cards.
Okay.
Almost like the Gautrain card, for lack of a better term. But these are good initiatives. But, you know, imposing taxes on people are like e-tolls.
Mm.
Rather give incentives to manufacturers to bring electric cars in, and incentives to filling stations to put electric car charging stations in, and incentivize ride-sharing lanes on the highways to reduce congestion like America does.
Right.
I think those are better initiatives, and it's part of this the strategy, but You know, the other part is typical typical South African, you know, tax and government. They want to tax people to try and change behavior as opposed to incentivizing people to change behavior. The strategy contains both, but I think the latter is probably better.
Yeah.
It's always just that the impulse to just take things from people rather than build things.
Exactly. Yeah, stimulate the economy rather than the other way around. Now, everybody knows that animal products are used in building the interiors of cars. Leather comes from cows, and other plastics and whatever contain animal products. Well, animal lovers can rejoice because a vegan car interior is on its way. VW and a couple of other manufacturers are introducing this new microfiber called Sudia. I don't know how to say it, S-U-E-D-I-A, which will replace... is replaced with vegan material, so there's no animal products within this this material.
I'm amazed this is only happening now.
Yeah, me too.
Absolutely amazed.
It's like kudos that they're doing it, but why did it take us so long when pleather has been a thing?
But if you look at like the VW up, they could have made an entirely vegan car.
A very hipster.
I mean, it's just like the PR that they can get out of this is huge.
Yeah, it's massive. It's massive. So so anyway, it's on
like,
its way.
Like, think of like the Prius Goodwill PR that they got when that thing came out.
Yeah, if the Prius and they slapped on some vegan leather, some fake leather on it, that would be the ultimate in your face. I'm a do-gooder car to drive.
Can you imagine like Ford, for example, anywhere you can save the Cougar, which they had so many bad press to make it full vegan. They could have saved that car.
Might have, it might have, but I mean that would have been a good thing. Wouldn't have stopped the car from you know, potentially having its issues, but it could have created a positive sentiment around the car at the time.
George, do you see any kickback to this? I don't think.
No, I don't think so. I think it's a good thing. You know, the only kickback will be it'll probably cost more to have that optional extra because the volumes aren't there yet.
Exactly.
You know, the majority of people aren't going to go for a vegan car. They're still going to go for the leather and the animal product interior.
But you look at, you know, a fake leather jacket and real leather, there's not really much of a massive difference.
So. Well, believe it or not, Tesla doesn't have real leather inside. It's got fake leather, which apparently is just as good as real leather. So those, you know, you're right. The leather jacket analogy does work. But they still contain animal products when they make those fake things. Whereas this is now a commitment to full vegan interiors in cars.
Oh. Once again, makes a Tesla amazing in your eyes.
I love Tesla. Yeah. Can else? Do no wrong. One last thing, and that is Volvo, during the Super Bowl. And everybody knows what the Super Bowl is.
Mm-hmm.
Ben should know what the Super Bowl is. During the Super Bowl, instead of watching the Super Bowl, they incentivized viewers to see who would look at their phone screen for the longest and then gave away cars for a period of 24 months, the use of cars for a period of 24 months for the people that looked at their phone the longest. So they gamified it, and you could drive a Volvo on your phone screen, and as long as you were looking at that phone screen, it recorded how long you were looking at the phone screen for.
Okay.
And believe it or not, the winner stared at their phone without looking away for 9 hours and 47 minutes.
Goodbye, miss me.
Wow.
So the Super Bowl was a non-event. So
the Volvo, that's like 2 years in a row now they've had some very interesting innovative
stuff. Exactly.
In the Super Bowl.
You know, so what was impressive about this campaign was that Volvo didn't have to pay $5 million during the Super Bowl for every 30-second ad.
Sure.
As a campaign, this is really smart.
It's very smart. Because so
everyone's driving eyes to the screen for the Super Bowl, and Volvo's differentiating itself by saying that actually take your eyes away from the football and focus on us. Interesting.
Exactly. Okay. So you know, Ben's right. 2 years in a row, Volvo's really cracked a campaign during the Super Bowl that that nobody's really seen coming, and good on them. I mean, these winners get to drive a Volvo for 2 years, and they get to be able to swap the car for another one in 12 months.
Oh.
So you know, who wouldn't want to stare at this phone screen for 9 hours?
Yeah, 9 hours is a lot, though. Just in my books.
That's it.
Fantastic. Thank you, George. What are you up to this weekend?
It's rainy. I'll probably, if it's raining, I won't go fly tomorrow.
Okay.
But if it's not, you know, if the rain does stop straight after the rain, usually the weather is beautiful to go flying. So I'll probably go do that. And then, you know, I've got a couple of things to do around the house. Probably do that.
Okay. Did you watch The Bachelor South Africa?
No.
Are you going to get into it?
Probably not.
Okay. Never mind. Ben, what are you up to this weekend?
I'm going to watch The Bachelor on catch up.
Yes.
I'm going to work because I'd rather do that than play golf. I don't know. So yeah, this week's been a bit shite. I'm going to try to pull myself towards myself and have fun times.
All right. What about you, Leanne?
Also bacheloring because we promised.
Yeah, George, we promised on the show to watch The Bachelor. Yeah, that's why we're so into
watch it.
But we all had load shedding last night, so we have to watch it on catch up.
Failed profusely. Yeah.
I mean, this is really boring, but I have to catch up on drying stuff.
Oh, yeah, that
too. I've got piles of wet clothing because of the rain and because of load shedding. So just like home admin stuff, maybe a bit of a spring clean.
Yeah. Oh, I'm looking forward to an easy and amazing weekend. In my mind, I've already have planned. I have one of those weekends where I walk in through my front door this afternoon and I only leave the house again on Monday morning. Let's see how long I last with that, but I'm really excited about that.
Do you shower and take your pajamas off?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do, but I'm just all indoors. Okay. So it's just like some TV.
No, I'm just trying to imagine the scenario, yeah? Is it chips and fizzy drinks on the couch in front of the TV the entire weekend?
No, George, no. I always think about, what if I die? I must still look good. So it's me in a fluffy robe. I might open the windows.
I can't unsee that, Sia.
It's me, a robe, I'm moisturized, glasses of Merlot, then I'm good. Just have that vision in your head now. All right, folks, we're calling it a day. Thank you so much for having us on. This is the Gareth Cliff Show. Gareth will be back on Monday, hopefully feeling way, way better. And either that, have an awesome, awesome weekend. Until Monday morning.
This is CliffCentral.com.